From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Welcome to the Wildcast podcast. I'm Arizona Daily Star sports editor Ryan Finley, here with Michael Lev. Michael, it's been too long. It's been a couple of weeks since me and you last sat down to talk. Where have we been?
Yeah, we've been riding the Arizona baseball roller coaster here for the last few weeks, up and down and up and down. And we got a huge series coming up this week, and we're going to talk about that today in our podcast. But first, a little bit of football, right?
Let's talk football. In a move that I guess should surprise nobody, but still surprises me a little bit, Kevin Sumlin is looking for a recruiting coordinator. He has posted on the U of A's job board a job opening that he hopes to fill. I believe they said that all resumes are due by the end of this week. This would ostensibly be a job that was Chris Singletary's a year ago, and would signal that Arizona's headed in a different direction recruiting-wise. Michael, your thoughts?
Well, as I understand it, Chris Singletary's going to probably remain on staff in a different role than what he's had. He's not going to be the guy who's in charge of the whole recruiting operation. So this is a new and additional position.
Gotcha.
And what it signals is that the athletic department is willing to invest the resources to have the best program possible.
Right.
Right? I mean, is it, you know, is Arizona going to be on the same level as Alabama in terms of how many analysts they have and staff members and how much the facilities cost and all that stuff? No. But can they get to a point where they're competitive with the rest of, say, the Pac-12 in those regards?
Right.
And I would say, yes, they can. And I think that this is symbolic of that desire to be as competitive as possible in one of the most important areas, which is bringing talent onto your football
team. Sure. And this position leads the league in fancy-ass job titles now. Or what is it again? It's like associate director of, was it senior recruiting something, in charge of high school relations?
Senior recruiting director of high school relations or something
like that
nature. But, you know, whatever the title is, I mean, I think we all know how important it is, number one,
right,
and how challenging it can be for Arizona. You know, there isn't as much talent here in this state. There's certainly not as much talent right around the Tucson area as you would have if you were UCLA or USC. Stanford's sort of an exception, but if you're in Washington, you've got Seattle,
Utah,
up there, Utah, you've got Salt Lake City, you've got all those Polynesian kids who have grown up in the state of Utah. So there are obviously challenges inherent in that job, and Kevin Sumlin felt that he needed to pour more resources into it beyond just, you know, kind of whatever was in place before or what the norm was. And I remember, you know, when he was hired and even in the aftermath, he's talked a lot about how it felt like the right time and the right fit, and, you know, he felt like he had the support that he needed. And it's one thing to say that, but it's another thing to actually see some proof of it. And I think that this job posting might be indicative of, it might represent the proof to a degree. So senior, the title, Ryan, is Senior Director of Recruiting and High School Relations.
Pretty good. That's pretty good. Now, there's something here too. And Michael, unless you can straighten me out on this. Do we know that this is a new position, or is this a shuffling of people around? For instance, is Chris Singletary now going to be an analyst, replacing an analyst who left at the end of last year? And is this guy taking what was essentially Chris Singletary's job? Do we know?
We don't know for sure, but as I understand it, it is a quote-unquote new position.
Gotcha.
And they're also going to be bringing in someone who's going to have kind of a digital social content creation type of job that's also going to be in support, you know, primarily working for football to beef things up in that regard. As we know, you know, social media now is such a big deal when it comes to recruiting. I mean, you kind of can't live without it.
So
I view this as, you know, is it shuffling positions around? Are they basically going to have the same number of people? I don't know. I'd have to do a head count.
Right.
When all the dust settles and we know who all the staff members, new staff members are compared to, you know, who ends up leaving here at some point this spring or summer. But I feel like, based on what I've been told, that it is the administration giving the green light to Kevin Sumlin to pour more resources into recruiting.
Right.
So whether, you know, whether it's shuffling things around or, you know, what the exact headcount is, don't know. But I think it's a positive in the sense that he has the support of Dave Hickey and President Robbins. You can go ahead and do this. We think it's important, and here's some money to
do it. Well, and here's sort of the reality, right? Here's life. Here's life in the big leagues. When you fire a coach for not recruiting well enough, you can't then keep his guys, can you?
No.
I mean, and as much as Chris Singletary came off as a very nice guy, just like Matt Dudek before him. Matt's now the recruiting coordinator at a little school we like to call Michigan. At some point, if you say our recruiting efforts aren't working, that means it's not only the head coach that you have to fire, but it's the people who recruited those areas, and it's frankly the people in charge of recruiting. And I'm sure to a certain extent somebody like Chris Singletary was just following orders, right?
Sure.
I mean, that's the job. He's a mid-manager, just like I'm a mid-manager here at the corner of Park and Irvington. At some point, you just do what the bosses say. On the other hand, if recruiting is the issue, maybe it's best to bring in people who have, you know, recruited at a high level before, and maybe it's best to bring in somebody who's worked with a high-performing recruiting staff before, and that's not what's happening here.
I think that things have improved over the last couple of years, or they did improve in Rich Rod's last couple of years when he shifted things around himself. He hired all those new defensive coaches, you know. I mean, you know that the guys he had here originally were kind of skewed a little bit older, maybe weren't too into the recruiting thing, especially on that side of the ball, and it reflected in some of the results that they got, or lack thereof.
Sure.
So he made some, you know, some movement in that regard, positive movement, and I think now we're taking it to another level.
Right.
Right? Like, what are the problems that we've all kind of noted when it comes to their recruiting efforts? Like, not recruiting the state of Texas, right? Not recruiting the Polynesian community. These are, like, maybe the two biggest ones, right? They're both taken care of. I mean, we're going to see results, I'm pretty sure, of all of their efforts. They've blanketed the state of Texas. Kevin Sumlin coached all his life in the state of Texas, as a head coach anyway. Both of his jobs were there. One of his top assistants, Clarence McKinney, from Houston.
Right.
He brought other people over from A&M. They're going to recruit Texas. They're going to bring in guys. Then Coach Yona on the defensive line, this guy that no one had really heard of, but was very big in the Polynesian community. He has reopened all of those lines of communication with all of those kids and all of those coaches, and they're going to bring in Polynesian kids like they did back in the day.
Right.
So they've taken care of that, they've taken care of that, and now they're going to bring in, you know, somebody who they feel like gives them the best chance to run a top-notch organization when it comes to recruiting in all elements, you know, whether it's relationships with high schools or being organized or using the latest technology, whatever the case, the person that they're going to bring into this role, someone that Kevin Sumlin wants, someone that he feels good about, and they can really kind of get the whole ball rolling.
Right. Have you heard any names, or is there anybody who jumps out for that job?
I have heard a name, and I can't really discuss it because I just don't have enough concrete confirmation. All I can say is that someone who's got some ties to someone who's very close to Kevin Sumlin within this organizational structure.
Knows a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy.
Yeah, right.
But this person, I think I'm...
Has coached it, has held a job like this at two FBS schools.
There we go. There we go. And not to mix my metaphors or my sports here, Michael.
You always do that, though, Ryan. You love mixing metaphors.
And I love apologizing for it and then just doing it. Not to mix my metaphors, but this, to me, is like a baseball team in the year 2018 saying, you know what? We should start scouting the Dominican Republic. There are some good players in the Dominican Republic. Hey, you know where there are some good pitchers? Let's try Japan, right? Arizona's never going to be landing Shohei Ohtani, shall we say. But they need to start spending, and I'm using air quotes, I'm not saying that they're spending, that they need to start spending in places like Texas, in places with the islands, in parts of Southern California.
Spending their time, their resources, their energy.
Right. That doesn't mean that they're going to instantly get better results, because recruiting, like scouting in baseball, is still very inexact, right? It's like a 1 in 5 chance you become a guy. But your chances are going to improve the more you get those kinds of players.
Right. Like, I think we talked about this before, but a 3-star player out of Texas might be the equivalent of a 4-star player in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just hundreds of D1 prospects in that football mad state,
mm-hmm.
right? And if you're bringing in, you know, it's sort of like, to use another baseball analogy, it's just you're getting more plate appearances,
yep.
more at-bats, right? More chances to get hits
right.
if you're bringing in just like sort of a higher caliber mm-hmm. Of player. Let's say you have 20 guys in your recruiting class, and five of them are 4-stars.
Mm-hmm.
And I think none were 4-stars in this last group. But Rivals had Adam Plant.
As a
4-star. But I just feel like I would like my chances of those players becoming good. I'd like my chances better.
Right.
If more of them were 4-star players than none of them being 4-star
players. Right. And
it doesn't, as you said, it doesn't always work out.
Right.
Jamarja Harris Cobb, Marquise Ware,
right.
Those were, you know, quote unquote 4-star guys who mm-hmm. were busts, frankly, for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I'd like to get up to the plate a little bit more often with those types of players.
Right. And we can agree that in recruiting, it takes all kinds, right? I mean, some guys, some Polynesian guys, some high end guys, some physical toolsy guys. It does take all kinds. That said, I'd rather have a class with 10 4-star players than a class with none or with 2. And we can argue the logic and occasional morality behind recruiting sites and rankings, but the fact is you want more good players on your roster.
Of course.
Because you have a higher floor, shall we say.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course. It's always been about that. Is coaching important?
Right.
Of course. It is also important. But... you know, you have to have a certain level of athlete,
right,
in order to win the Pac-12 South or whatever their, you know, goals mm-hmm. are, to finally make the Rose Bowl, which is something that,
mm-hmm.
you know, Kevin Sumlin hasn't, you know, shied away from talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone loves kind of the scrappy underdog, but it's tough to beat USC and Washington when they're bringing in a bunch of future NFL players when you yourself don't have any NFL caliber players on your roster.
Not to be glib here, but me and you are just two dudes sitting in kind of a windowless room talking about this. It makes total sense to us, right? This whole thing. Well, of course you need to recruit Texas. Of course you need to recruit the islands. Of course it's good to recruit California. Hey, you know, why not go get guys who love, you know, love football? Yeah. We sit there and go, the more stars, the better. The more different kinds of guys, the better. Rich Rodriguez went the other way and said, I alone will decide who's worthy of playing at Arizona, and I will call that guy an OKG. Given some time to look back at the whole OKG phenomenon, what are we to make of that? And is it time to bury that term? I'm good never saying the phrase OKG ever again.
OKG standing for our kind of guy.
Our kind of guy, yeah.
I mean, it was a cool slogan.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Rich Rod was undone by his own stubbornness, you know, feeling like he didn't have to do those things in order to
mm-hmm.
to build a great roster. And he may also have been hurt by the early success that he had, largely with players who were recruited by the previous regime.
Right.
Kadeem
Carey.
Sure, Kadeem Carey, great
Matt's
example.
Matt Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he recruit Anu, or was that a...
I believe he recruited
he Anu. He did recruit Anu,
yeah.
right?
Okay. Or re-recruited him, at least. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, when you look at the totality of Rich Rod's tenure here, I mean, I would say overall,
mm-hmm.
pretty good, right?
Right.
I mean, they went to a bowl game in 5 out of 6 years, which means that they were above 500
mm-hmm.
in 5 out of 6 years. They won the Pac-12 South once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at Arizona historically, I mean, that's not bad,
nope.
right? But he did not, you know, he did not get the job done when it came to that one specific and critically important area of replenishing
mm-hmm.
the cupboard,
right.
you know?
And he didn't have to at Michigan to a certain extent. And Michigan, at least guys showed up on his doorstep at Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan is one of those schools you could probably say that it quote-unquote recruits itself to a degree.
Right, and at West Virginia, they did recruit well, but they very much had a type, and their type fit their offense, which was so unique at the time. Right.
Yes,
you could go absolutely. You could go get Noel Devine from Florida, from like the Everglades of Florida. He's from Everglade City, I think. You can go get Noel Devine from there because who else is going to go after a guy who's listed as 5'7"?
Right.
Right? But now, when everybody runs the same stuff or versions of the same stuff, I mean, the fact that you're different isn't even your identity anymore. You have to go out-recruit other schools who are running your offense.
Right. And they're also practicing against those offenses all the time.
Right.
You know? And we've talked about this topic before, but, you know, the uniqueness of that offense was, I mean, it gave Rich Rod an advantage back in the day, and they didn't necessarily have that advantage. Now, if you have an unbelievable athlete like Khalil Tate running the system, you can still, you know, put up a crazy amount of points and yards and so on and so forth, but... you know, he couldn't get away with that anymore. Right. Just like the system is going to be what wins for me.
Right.
Had to be a combination of the system plus talent.
Plus talent.
Can I break some news on the podcast here?
Oh, good news or
bad news? I don't know how to describe this exactly, but, the San Diego Padres are not going to pitch the first no-hitter.
I know.
In organizational history.
8 1/3 today. Was it 8 1/3? Or 7 1/3?
7 1/3.
Yeah.
For Jordan Lyles. For those who don't know, Ryan's a huge, lifelong San Diego Padres fan. The Padres have never had a no-hitter. Jordan Lyles took one into the eighth inning.
Took a perfect game. Took a perfect game in the eighth
In fact, and it's not going to happen.
So and as we sat down to record this, I went, well, let's just wrap it up so I can go watch the ninth. And about 4 minutes in, if you hear any buzzing in the background, it was about 6 or 7 text messages of people going, unprincipled things, shall we say. Shall we say? Like, can we talk about baseball while we're talking about baseball?
That was the transition I was trying to make there.
By the way, I like how you phrased it as good news. Good news to who, Michael Lev?
It's good news that you're not going to miss it.
Well, there we go.
so there's that.
Arizona plays
good news for the Colorado Rockies. Arizona, not suffering that indignity.
That of losing to Jordan Lyles. Arizona plays ASU this weekend at High Corbett Field.
Yep.
A series that in 1978 or 1988 or 1998 or 2008 would be the highlight of everybody's season. This is not most seasons. Arizona State is in pretty bad. It's been tough sledding for Tracy Smith and his guys. And the U of A, frankly, we don't know what we're getting week in and week out of them. They've been very inconsistent. You shared with me, Michael, yesterday, the greatest stat I've ever heard. Was it 37? What was the number?
Yeah, the runs allowed by the Arizona pitching staff. They gave up 4 runs in the entirety of the UCLA series, which they swept. And then they gave up 37 runs in 3 games at Cal.
Right.
And I don't remember. They gave up 4 runs in an inning several times. 4 or more runs in an inning several times, which is, you know, the same amount that they gave up in an entire 27-inning series the previous weekend. So, you know, I guarantee when we talk to Jay Johnson tomorrow or Wednesday, if you happen to be listening to this on Wednesday or Thursday or whenever, that's the first thing he's going to point to, you know? It's the pitching.
Yep.
And when you get great starting pitching, like, it just makes everything so much easier.
Sure.
And Cody Deason and Michael Flynn and Juan Aguilera were dialed in for that UCLA series. Sure. They were dominant. They didn't have to dip into the bullpen very much at all. I mean, Cody Deason pitched a complete game.
Yeah.
You know, when you need to get 5-6 outs at the end as opposed to 12, I mean, as you know, I mean, it just makes a huge difference.
Sure.
This is not Major League Baseball,
right,
where it's kind of that race to the bullpen, and you've got all these arms, and you can just go right, left,
left. Yeah. In college baseball, your best pitchers are your starters, or at least they should be.
Correct. You will on occasion, you know, a lot of teams have a good closer, but, you know, securing that bridge between the starter and the closer can be problematic, and it has been problematic at times for the very inconsistent 2018 Wildcats.
And it's interesting, too, I mean, my eyes tell me that they're not an NCAA tournament team. I watch them play. Even in with the sweep of UCLA, my goodness, they look good. But you look and you go, I'm not sure I see it. On paper, though, they're right there, aren't they? They're right there heading into a three-game series that they should win.
Even after that sweep,
right,
and then they beat Sacramento State on Monday, their RPI is still okay.
Right.
They're 43rd in RPI, and they were 36th going into it.
Right.
So, I mean, losing to a quote-unquote quality opponent on the road, it's not going to kill you. The problem is they're 10-14 in the Pac-12.
Right.
And 16-14 has been kind of the magic number for them the last 2 years to get in. I think that if they can get to 15-15,
mm-hmm.
that they will get in. There's some sentiment that if they're 14-16 that they could sneak in.
But that still requires them going 5-1 or 4-2 the rest of the way.
Correct, yeah. And what are the odds of that? Like, I was, you know, we were talking last night a little bit, and I said to you, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they swept ASU, because
sure.
that's just kind of how this team has been.
Sure.
And they've been dominant at home. When you kind of think they're down, they rise up. When you think they've got it rolling, they kind of fall back.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of have to do that, though, in order to give themselves a shot
right.
at this thing. Let me ask you a question.
Yes, yes.
When you were covering Arizona baseball, or you were attending the University of Arizona, where was ASU as a program? What was your perception of it? What was
baseball-wise?
The perception of it nationally.
Oh, it was, especially when I was covering them, right? I mean, it was Pat Murphy. Pat Murphy. And Pat Murphy was, depending on whether he was on your team or not, either the greatest man alive or Satan himself. Pat Murphy would recruit literally everybody, sign literally everybody, even if you're going number one in the draft. He would claim you as his own, right? Pat Murphy was a tough guy to like, and the ASU teams were tough teams to like. They played the game hard. They always had all the best players. If you follow college baseball in the Pac-12, at least for the Pat Murphy era, they were easily the most feared and most hated team in the league.
Easily the most feared and most hated team in the league. Wow.
Yeah. That's not the case with old Tracy Smith now.
Might be the most hated.
They still might be the most hated. But, you know, what's weird is, and I consider ASU to be one of America's great college baseball programs, right? Maybe even a little bit ahead of the U of A in the grand scheme of things.
You can make a case. I got some numbers here.
Please.
22 College World Series appearances, 4 times between in a 6-year span from 05 to 10,
mm-hmm.
5 national championships,
mm-hmm.
5 runner-up mm-hmm. Appearances in the College World Series finals. That's pretty good. I don't know how many other schools can boast of a resume like that.
Barry Bonds, Reggie Jackson, Bob Horner, Dustin Pedroia. I mean, we can kind of go down the list.
Yeah.
And it's a chain of players that hasn't really stopped, right? I mean, the U of A has sort of this ebb and flow, right, where a certain time they'll have 6 guys in the league and then maybe none for a while or 2 for a while. ASU is one of America's great programs, which is why I'm so baffled by their, well, lack of success the last couple of years. I mean, they moved off campus to kind of a weird, I mean, sort of ripping off what Arizona did with High Corbett. Tracy Smith is a guy who showed up guns blazing and was kind of an outspoken fella there for a while. It's kind of gone underground as they've struggled. I don't think they're recruiting particularly well. They're not winning. You tell me, Michael Webb, what in the hell has happened to ASU?
Yeah, I think, I mean, they've also had trouble figuring out the pitching side of things. What's really kind of strange to me is just how supportive, I mean, maybe strange is the wrong word, because it's kind of what you'd expect your AD to say when he's interviewed. But Ray Anderson has had Tracy Smith's back. He brought him in here.
Mm-hmm.
He continues to at least publicly express patience
right.
with him, despite the fact that they are about to have their second consecutive losing season.
That's crazy.
I don't know if that's ever happened.
Arizona State University.
They called last year the worst year in the history of the program, and I think just record-wise that it was.
Mm-hmm.
They technically had an under 500 season in 2007 when they had to vacate a bunch of wins for NCAA violations.
Pat Murphy, yeah.
Under Pat Murphy. But so they were 23-32 last year. They're 21-28. I think they have 6 games left. So even if they won all of them, they'd be 27-28. I mean, does Tracy Smith deserve another year?
Coming
off back-to-back losing seasons at ASU?
How can you lose at ASU? What about ASU? What about ASU turns a kid off? And I mean this. ASU is a school with an incredible tradition, somewhat easy to get into academically. Great facilities, great uniforms. I'll say it, their uniforms are awesome.
How about you can play year-round, and there's a gazillion baseball facilities and coaches
and
places you can go to play outdoor or indoor in the Phoenix area.
Right. You can shoot a T-shirt cannon from the top step of Memorial Stadium. I think that's where they play now, Phoenix Memorial, or Municipal or whatever. From their home field, you can shoot a T-shirt cannon and hit six guys who are Division I players. I wonder how many pros just come take BP there in the winter. It's every advantage you should have.
BP or just make their off-season homes there.
Right,
you know?
Right. And to be not only beaten but lapped by schools like Oregon State.
Right.
What? Like it doesn't make any sense. And Tracy Smith, by all accounts, a decent guy. And, you know, he coached Kyle Schwarber at Indiana, which is why he's at ASU now. I mean, if he can't get it going there, I mean, they got to find somebody who can. Because it ain't that hard, I don't think.
He fired Tim Esme.
Yep.
It was the previous coach. Yep. And if you look at their wins, I mean, you can kind of see that things were deteriorating a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They won 52 games his first season, then 43, 36, 37, 33.
Right.
So kind of a downward trend there. Tracy Smith comes in. They go 35 and 23 the first year, 36 and 23. And then, I mean, things just took a U-turn a year ago. And, I mean, they're finishing, you know, at or near the bottom of the Pac-12. They were 8-22 in Pac.
How about this? Let's say you have a bad year and you're Arizona State. Just speaking generally. Sure. You have a crappy year. Why aren't you getting every good junior college player in America? Why aren't you getting... I mean, it's not as hard as Tracy Smith is making it look, I don't think. They should be better. And I think that Ray Anderson, in an unguarded moment, would agree that it's a little embarrassing that they've been as bad as they've been. You know, we can argue about Arizona being a basketball school. I think Arizona State has been and will forever be a college baseball school, one of the great elite programs. And to see them come to Tucson this weekend in what should most years be a make or break kind of series, and have
for both teams,
right.
Really only a make or break for one team,
right? But to have kind of Arizona and ASU, I mean, sort of both running on fumes at this point. It's disappointing. I hope they prove me wrong. I hope it's a great three-game series of tight, quickly paced, well-played games. My guess is it's not going to be. My guess is it's going to be some sort of a pillow fight.
The first game against UCLA was awesome. Do you know how many pitching changes there were in that game? None.
Awesome.
No pitching changes. I'm like, when was the last time that ever happened in college baseball, MLB? Anywhere. I certainly wouldn't count on that happening again, but I think it'll be very intense atmosphere because it's ASU, and it always is, and I think it would help a lot for Arizona's sake if they were to win the first game of the series.
Correct.
That would, again, you want to have a shot at this thing, you kind of have to, you know, in order to sweep the series, you have to win the first game, right?
Right.
But I think that would kind of get the community a little bit more engaged,
right?
And we'd see a nice big crowd on Friday night after the opener on Thursday night. Let me throw a couple more stats at you real quick here, Ryan, before we go. Even though, you know, Arizona is struggling, relatively speaking, this year, and they might not make the tournament for the first time in Jay Johnson's three seasons, they still will have eclipsed the 30-win mark for the third straight year. Mm-hmm. So that's a good accomplishment. I looked it up. Jay, in his time over the last 3 years in midweek games... Okay, so that includes any Tuesday or Wednesday game,
right,
plus any of those Monday, like, we're sleeping over and playing against
Utah Valley. Right.
They are 25-7 in those games.
That's incredible.
ASU in midweek games over the same span, 12-17.
To me, that speaks to two things. And maybe I'm wrong, but it speaks to pitching depth, relatively, that if you have the guys to roll out there on a Tuesday. I think it also speaks to approach. Covering college baseball as long as I did, certain teams did not care about midweek games, and certain teams did, right? And sometimes it varied depending on your record. Sometimes it varied depending on your coach's mood. But, I mean, I remember covering some midweek games, even Arizona midweek games, where they're just throwing guys out there because they want to keep their seventh-inning guy good for Friday, Saturday, so there's no chance he's seeing this game. And, you know, it's in a way, it's a strategy that sometimes works. But, you know, it's a game of wins and losses. A game of wins and losses.
And I think that the approach part is huge. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, I mean, Jay Johnson, every week, every game's a Super Bowl, right?
Yep.
And, I mean, he doesn't just say that. I mean, he preaches it.
Now, right.
Is he going to throw his Friday night starter out there on Tuesday night against New Mexico State? Of course not.
No.
But he goes into every one of those games with some sort of a plan.
Right.
Right? And he tells us guys, hey, every game's a playoff game.
Right.
You know, we need to win these. And you can – probably not going to gain a lot of RPI points by winning those games, but, man, you can hurt yourself a lot by losing them.
Right.
And I think that's been part of his kind of overall strategy to put the Wildcats in the best position possible.
Right.
To make the postseason, right. Which, you know – they might fall a little bit short this year, but that has nothing to do with those games. That has to do with the way they performed in conference games.
Right, right. And I think Arizona, the big picture, I heard this phrase the other day, that I think that they're moving the needle in areas that move the needle, right? They're winning at home, which is what all good teams do. They're not losing in non-conference games, which is what all good teams do. Again, consistency is going to be the last thing that comes into place. I think there are a lot of good signs on this team in terms of approach, in terms of makeup, all of that. I just think that they're a little short in the talent department and in the pitching department. And, you know, until that changes, you know, you're probably not going to be spending too many more Junes in Omaha.
Right. I think as an example of that, I think two of their best arms, just mm-hmm. in terms of arm talent,
right.
are Jonathan Guardado and Gil Luna, and they're both freshmen.
Right.
And you know what you're going to get out of freshman pitchers. For the most part, you're going to get a lot of inconsistency.
Right.
You know, you're going to get walks.
Right.
You're going to get, like, strike a guy out and then hit the next guy,
right.
that kind of thing. And we saw that a lot in the Cal series.
Yeah.
And I think as time goes on, you're going to see the talent mm-hmm. and the pitching side of things increase.
Yeah.
He's going to bring in better pitchers.
Yeah.
As he gets deeper into his career here, Jay Johnson, that is, I think we're going to see better pitching,
right.
From the Wildcats. I think he would never use this word, but I think he's borderline obsessed with fixing the pitching staff.
And to bring the first half of our show and the second half of our
yeah.
show together.
Yeah.
I think in a way, Jay Johnson is suffering from some of the perception issues that got Rich Rodriguez early. Jay Johnson won right away. And when you win right away, your average fan thinks, A, it's easy. B, thinks that you're winning right away because of the coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't realize that the reason the previous coach was fired or retired is because there were glaring issues in the program that must be fixed the right way.
And over the course of time.
Right, with
yeah.
recruiting and development. Right,
mm-hmm.
recruiting,
right.
development. That's all it is. I think the same way Rich Rod impressed everybody by winning a bowl game in his first year and then... you know, maybe changing the expectations to a place where they weren't realistic for a while. I think Jay Johnson did a lot of that by getting so close to winning a national championship in his first year. I think that there are average fans out there that go, well, so what? He's just gone like this. I'm doing the universal going downhill signal
mm-hmm.
here.
Yeah.
And that's not really the case. It's just he had better pitching in year one than he has now in year three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. It's tough. When you set the bar so high.
Yeah.
You know, he raised the level of expectations by mm-hmm. going to the College World Series Finals in his first year with a team
right.
that wasn't supposed to get there.
Right.
Right? And so then going into the next year, they're picked to finish higher in the Pac-12. They have an okay year. This year, they're picked to finish fourth,
mm-hmm.
and they're not fourth right now.
Right.
And it's been tough.
Right. They'll finish between, what, 6th and 10th? Probably 6th and 9th.
I mean, it depends.
Yeah.
Depends on this final stretch.
Right.
They've got 6 more shots at it, you
right.
know. So home ASU Thursday through Saturday, and then they're at Oregon. And for their sake, hopefully those Oregon games will mean something.
Absolutely. That'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Michael Love, I like this, by the way. I like college baseball talk.
Anytime, man. You know I'm here.
I know it.
Hopefully they'll make the postseason.
Yeah, hopefully they make things interesting.
About,
exactly. For Michael Lev, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.